All right, so we're going to start. So welcome to Mike M's Collector's Corner. I have a very special guest here, a friend that I've never met, but I have talked to over the years online, and he's the current Guinness Book of World Record holder for the largest recorded comic collection, and it is Bob Breetall. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. I'll start by saying, it's like there's a couple of things with the Guinness record. One, it's a giant pain in the butt to get a Guinness record. So, a lot of people, they might have more comics, they just haven't bothered to do it. It's like whenever I get the record and when I got the record, and it's been several years since I actually got in the book. But people always, they always know somebody or they have somebody's uncle or brother or something that has way more comic books than I do. And I'm like, well, that's great. I like people who have lots of comics, It's just I kind of stumbled into it. I didn't set out to have the Guinness record. It's just
Well, what made you go for it?
well, you remember back in the CGC days, which I think is where we are, not CGC, well, having a
CGS?
CGS days, I had a little bit of slabbing
I was like, yeah.
nightmare come up into my mind there for a second. But CGS, Comic Geek Speak, I think we met back there, and it's like on their forum, they had a very active forum, and somebody on the forum posted something about a guy in Australia who had the world record comic book collection, and he had, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember off the top of my head, it's like 65,000 comics. And I was like, I have way more than 65,000 comic books, and then I looked into it, and it turned out he was through the World Record Academy, which is, I guess, an Australian version of Guinness. But when I think of a world record, I think of Guinness Book of World Records, but
So
as most people do.
most people do, because we've
So I
seen it on
went,
TV and on the newspaper strip.
So I went to Guinness and I did some research because I wanted to know what the Guinness World Record was for comic books, since this guy in Australia had the World Record Academy record. Well, Guinness didn't have one, So I did some research and I looked into, what I'd need to do. So I applied and I said, I laid out my case and I said, well, here's the this guy in Australia has the record through the World Record Academy. I have at least 50% larger collection than him. I had 90,000 plus at the time. And I said, well, seems like Guinness should have this record and we can, be much higher than that one. And so they sent me all the paperwork and everything I needed to do to get the record. And there was a lot of stuff you needed to do. You need to have it verified, which is a process, but it's not like somebody's not going to come out and count every individual comic book, right? But you do need to have verified authority. So I had the guy who runs my local comic shop, who's been in business for over 20 years, and I have another guy who has a collecting comics website and blog that lives down in San Diego, who actually also used to be an accountant and auditor.
Ah, nice.
And those guys were my verifiers of the record. And you also have to hold a public event. You have to, so I was at Long Beach Comic Con, which is local because I live in Southern California, and I was doing a panel on building a comic collection that year. So I handed out flyers at that panel and at the con that I was going to be having this public event, like 2 or 3 weeks after the con.
I remember this because you actually gave away some duplicates and
I
stuff at
well, here's the thing. So Guinness gives you the rules on this, and so you can't count doubles. So all these people who have you know, a big box full of X-Force number one, you know.
And Youngblood number one and Spawn number
Blood one. Youngblood number one and all these kind of things. You know, all that counts as one comic, right? Because you can't count the duplicates.
That would be hard.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a way to extract it because I think we both use the same software, Comic Base.
Yeah, so what I did was, and actually Comic Base is working on for their next major release a Guinness count feature because I've been talking with Pete Bickford about that. But what I did to do the Guinness count was I did a dump of the database to an Excel spreadsheet where you can, you know, sort it however you want once it's in Excel. And, you know, there's the field that has the quantity. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't use the quantity field. I just used the count instead of quantity. And I built pivot tables that would allow me to, you know, pivot it so that I could see, you know, here's all the ones that are in this box. And, you know, I could do a count of the whole thing. And that's how I did my count of the whole thing. But to verify it, what the accountant guy did, which is actually pretty good, was he went in and he picked like 10 or 20, probably closer to 20 comics just at random. You know, so he'd say, oh, show me Thor number 238. And I'd look in Comic Base and it would tell me what box that was in. And it would, whatever it would say, you know, box 58. I would pull out box 158, page through it, and there it was. You know, I showed him that comic. So he did spot checks on that.
Right.
And he also pulled out, and he had his teenage son there with him. But he actually pulled out three or four boxes and had his son count every comic in that box. Mm-hmm. And then he compared the count of the box with the count that Comic Base said I had in that box.
Right. Oh, and so did you also have a pivot table per box? Great.
Because I sort of, you know, you can pivot it in Excel a whole bunch of different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So I could say, okay, you know, box, you know, 220, sure, that should have, you know, 243 comic books in it, and mm-hmm. it countered it, and by God, there was 243 comics, whatever, in there. And then he also did a visual check, you know, because at that time I had, whatever, like 350 long boxes, or I think maybe 320 or 330, I forget what the number was. And then I had some drawer boxes, you know, and all of them were, I have a field in Comic Base that's box number, so I know where the comic.
See, that's the one. That's the one thing I've lacked is I struggle with this. The thing I struggle with the most, and that's one of the questions I want to get to eventually, is the merge.
I don't merge.
I know it sounds like you read and it goes into a box.
I alphabetize each box, but I don't merge.
Alphabetize by company. And
no,
then,
I just alphabetize straight in the in each box. So when I read comics, I throw them in a long box. When the long box is full, I enter the long box into Comic Base at that point, along with the number of the box. But, you know, actually, I throw the comics in the box. I alphabetize the box straight alphabetical by title through the whole box. And then I enter it into Comic Base, and there I have it. So if any comic that I look up in the database, it tells me what box it's in. And then I just need to flip through that box to the appropriate alphabetical location in it.
Right.
And there's the comic.
A question I have on that is, did you always have it like that? Or is that something
when I had like a very small amount of comics, you know, like when I was in my teens and probably into my 20s, you know, I probably attempted to keep them more in order. You know, I'd have all my, you know, this or that, you know, all together, all my Marvel books were here or something like that. But at a certain point that just became too much of a hassle. Right.
I did a merge about 10 years ago. That was like a massive one. And it took me months.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of back-breaking activity.
lifting boxes,
moving it. And since that activity, I've been struggling, like, what to do. And I think I need to go to it. It's just the merge is like it's what I would want. Do you know what I mean? It's what I would really want. I'd want my Marvel all in one area, and my DC and my Valiant. But it's become too large. It's become too massive, and it's too much of a task.
I have certain things that are extracted from, I mean, because the thing that's hard is if I wanted to pull together 20 issues in a row of something from the last 25 years, I would be looking in a whole bunch of different places. Before that, I think probably 25 years ago is maybe the last time I did some kind of a merge, but I have like probably the first 80 boxes or 100 boxes of the collection are in pretty much one alphabetic order. And then it just kind of gets a little more, they're just each box is alphabetized after that. But I have certain things, like I have my first 130, 140 issues of Amazing Spider-Man pulled out and they're in drawer boxes. I've got, my first 100 or so issues of FF and, Justice, the first run of the Justice League, maybe not the whole first run, but, up to issue 200 or something, and I have those in my drawer boxes, as well as some of my older, Silver Age things are up in the drawer boxes. But, everything else is by and large down in the collection. But, anyway, so back to, so they, he counted a few boxes and then he went and he physically, ticked off and made sure I had all the boxes. And I thought that was a pretty fair way of assessing that, everything was there that I said would have, I had, because if I
Well, it's
was
like a software
one,
audit or quality
right,
audit. They do
exactly.
spot checks in various
Exactly.
areas, and they don't check the whole thing. They just check to make sure you
Exactly.
got your ducks in a row,
And if I'm pulling his leg, something would have probably popped out in that. And that was what we verified with Guinness. So, there, so Guinness, you can't count duplicates. You can't count things that they don't count as a comic book. So, I mean, I have thousands of items that don't technically count as comic books. Like I've got like a whole bunch of issues of Amazing Hero, Wizard Magazine, Comics Buyer's Guide, Comics Journal. These are all things about comics, but they're not comics. And even things like Ohotmu and, Who's Who of the DC Universe, they don't fit the Guinness definition of a comic because they're not
Sequential art.
sequential art telling a story,
Or any
right?
of the pin-up like
Pin-up books,
swimsuit magazines or
I don't
cover
count. None
magazines.
of those are counted. So basically, what I had to do to take those out was I made another custom field in Comic Base called Not Comic. And I tagged all those things as not, kind of not comic. And then I took that out of my count.
Was the export pretty extensive, or because you're
Export
going to
just.
Excel. Excel takes in so many rows. I mean,
Yeah, Excel's a little slow when you get that many, rows of data into it. But it took me, boy, it probably took me the most part of a day to just kind of fiddle around with it once I had the Excel export to, build the pivot tables and do the other stuff. But it's not that big of a deal once you have all the data in it, set up the right way. I had the box numbers, I had the not comic fields and all that, so I was able to sort things out. More disturbingly was when I cleansed the data, I found that there were some number of books that like were missing the box number field. And I'm like, oh crap, where is that when it got put in? You just forgot to fill in the box field. Oh, where is that? And then you have to like kind of do some forensic. Okay, well, it's this issue, so it's gonna be around in this area, and you gotta go and try to find it and fill the
That
date in and stuff.
might be good with your pattern, because I think you intake your books and you read them as you intake them. For me, that would be tougher. because I tend to sit on them and read them when I feel like it. So I try to like maximize my pleasure of a book, like being in the mood for it. Like I don't try to like force a book, like force read it just to get it out of the way.
I do that too. I mean, I've got right now about a long box and a half is my to read pile.
Yeah.
And I have certain ones that I read right when they come out. But like I was just reading, I caught up on Nowhere Men this morning and I read like about four or five issues in a row of it. And I read about four or five issues of No Mercy. I was in the N area of the box.
Right, right. You know, it's that sounds like my reading pattern, but more at a deeper schedule. I mean, in other words, I have more unread books than I definitely know you do.
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep it as like, and I don't get as many books anymore as I used to. I mean, I'm probably getting more like about 100 to 120 a month now.
That's still a lot.
Yeah, but you know, for a while back at a certain point, I was getting about 180 or more.
Yeah.
And boy, I just could not keep up with that. You know, it wasn't buying them necessarily. It was just, I can't read that many comic books.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a month. So it's just kind of, you know,
it's the mode I'm in. I can't. There's certain months that, like, when on the holiday, like Christmas break, I can read a lot of excess, but there's no way I can catch up. But yeah, that's a good pattern. It sounds like you have everything, and then it gets recorded and bagged and bored. And do you use the actual official drawer box, or do
I have actually both. I have the drawer boxes, and I wrote a blog about it at one point.
The BCW comics.
Yeah. Actually, after I had the record, at some point, you know, somebody noticed, or I was writing something about drawer boxes, and one of the guys at marketing guy at BCW is like, "Hey, can I send you some of these to evaluate?" And I'm like, "Okay." So they sent me.
And I'm really biased because I don't like BCW boxes.
Well, you know, what I found about them is the drawer boxes are a little sturdier, but in general, what I like about the drawer boxes is the box locks are really good. I kind of simulated that with the BCW ones by getting some double-sided tape and kind of building them into a solid block.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that made them a little more stable. But the end of the box, since it's just kind of a normal box, is not quite as sturdy when you're pulling it out as the official drawer boxes.
Mm-hmm. I just started the locks and I love them. I just don't like to set them up.
Yeah, I mean, you got to.
I don't know if my arms are like long enough, but I have a hard time with the far ones.
Yeah, well, I only have short ones because I can't. I don't have any place long enough. I guess closets in California are not as deep as closets wherever the guys who invented drawer boxes are.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I cannot fit a drawer box in any closet in my house. You know, long, you know, the normal way that they're supposed to be. So the drawer is facing out, the closet door would not close. And I'm not prepared to make the fashion statement of having a giant wall of drawer boxes out in the open in the house.
Well, I made the decision to go to short several years ago because of a hernia I got.
Yeah.
I had a flooding incident where I had to haul a bunch of long boxes up, and I got a hernia from it. And I said, "This is ridiculous. I'm not going to switch to short boxes." As I get older, like I used to be able to haul those long boxes when I was younger, but now they've gotten so heavy,
with
the halfbacks and mylars that I use, that I have to use two people.
You use halfbacks and Mylars even on regular comics that you read?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
I order from
You're hardcore, buddy.
I order from E. Gerber, and I do exactly what I think you do, is you order by the thousand. That's
Yeah.
what I do about every 2 months. I
Yeah,
order
but
by
I'm
how
only
much I need.
paying about 8 cents a bag board combo when I buy 1,000 bags and boards. I have a problem with paying 50 or 60 cents for a Mylar and a backing board for a book
Yeah,
that's ultimately going to be a 50 cent bin book, you know?
it kind of takes away the yeah, it depends on how you like to keep them. Like
Oh yeah.
to me, it's like I'm not doing it to, at least not now. There's got to be a point in time when I have to assess my life, and I don't have kids, so I'm not gonna like say, "Oh, kids, you inherit my collection." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't leave it all on my wife to try to sell this stuff. So I have to work towards it. But at this point in my life, I'm still going hog wild with getting back issues and current issues, and
Yeah.
I'll have to reassess. In about 10 years,
Well, I noticed that, when I look, and plus I have, I mean, I live in Southern California. There's not really, it's not as low humidity as Colorado, but I mean, there's not any kind of humidity problem. It's like there's a decent amount of humidity here. That your nasal passages aren't all dried out like every time I go to Colorado.
Not Florida or North
Right,
Carolina
exactly. It's
humidity.
not Texas or down south or someplace that gets all like that. And so I don't have that kind of a problem. I don't have it doesn't flood where I'm at, so I don't have any kind of flood problem or anything like that. And I actually looked at books that I had had in normal poly bags for like 30 years, and they were just fine. It
Oh,
was like,
I
yeah,
agree. Like that last merge, they were in poly bags, and yes, they look pretty nice still. They're just a little bit of a discoloration. That's it, and it's
I
not
think,
even noticeable discoloration until you like put it against a like white background.
exactly. And
So.
I think that there's a big difference if you live in some place where your conditions are a little harsher, that
Yes.
might degrade them a little faster. And, of course, people who are in the business of selling Mylar would, have you believe that putting your comic in a normal poly bag is kind of like wrapping it in a tissue and sitting it out in the rain. But I don't believe that to be the case. It's just, I use Mylars just like you do for any comic that's worth probably more than 20 or 25 bucks, So my older books I put in Mylar, but when I buy like just normal books nowadays, I throw them in a poly bag, and it's just, it's just so much. But I can understand, people who like the Mylar, you like the feel of it, you like how the books look really crisp and everything in them. That's fine. For me, it's not something I do, but I can get behind, doing it.
So let's talk a little bit about collecting, 'cause there's different types of collectors. I kind of want to know what type of collector you are. I think you're the same type of collector as me, where we like read all our books, or we try to read all our books, and then we collect them. I mean, it's not like we read a digital book where it's like we read it and it's just in byte format. We actually collect it and we file it away.
Yeah, I've changed over the years, and I can thank Marvel and DC for beating the completist mentality out of me.
When did that happen?
Probably within the last 10 years. I mean, it's really, the first part of it was with just the practice of every single series pretty much getting canceled and restarted with a new number one. You know, and Marvel's been doing that since the 90s on things. You know, DC started doing it with the New 52. You know, DC's not as much of an offender, but I can see them moving in that direction.
Well, it kind of becomes the industry norm. Even Archie has done it. I can understand why, just from looking at the sales. I think a lot of people get, like, just because of the sheer amount of titles, they get like ADD of collecting, and they want to move to whatever's new and fresh.
Well,
my theory.
People also, they want to feel like they're getting in on the beginning of something. New people. I mean, I was talking to someone online just last week, and she was asking me about Rebirth, and you know, I was saying, well, I'm liking action more than I like Superman, for instance.
I concur.
And she was like, oh, well, I didn't get action because it was like 900 and something, and I didn't want to come in on the middle of something. And I like explain. It's like, look, you know, it's the exact same starting point on the first Rebirth issue of action as the number one of Superman. You just, you know, all these, this character's been around for forever, you know.
Yeah, you're not gonna go buy 1930 Action Comics number one.
You're not gonna read every single issue of this character. You know, you just look for the beginning of a story and, you know, hope for the best. I mean, it's just like some writers actually make things more accessible than others do, and you know, others, you read a number one issue and it's like you walked in on the middle of a movie, right? And it's just like, what the hell is going on? And it's just
you know what, though? I'm going back to reading a lot of Bronze Age Marvel because I wasn't as big into Marvel as I was DC. DC has kind of been my go-to. And I noticed that they did it back in the Bronze Age. Like, I read Iron Man number one, and sure enough, that continued right out of Tales of Suspense, and I didn't read those issues. And then I just recently purchased Ghost Rider number one, and that continued right out of Marvel Spotlight. So I think that practice, although back then,
very limited application, right?
Yeah. But there were a lot less titles, too.
But the other thing was is that I started reading almost all those titles not at the first issue, and I don't recall having a hard time jumping on.
Oh,
right?
And the other thing that was nice about it back then is they told you this happened in Tales of Suspense, whatever.
Right. So my point is that even if the story was kind of continuing, the way that they wrote books back then, it was a little easier to kind of come up to speed on them.
Oh yeah. They'd give you at least one or two panels or maybe even more telling you what happened.
Which when you're reading them all in a row in a collected edition, that's what puts some people off of reading those older books because it is a very different storytelling style.
Yes.
You know, they were really meant to be read in a serialized monthly fashion, not as a collected edition, you know, so it's kind of like that waiting for the trade kind of mentality.
Yeah. You didn't have to hear every issue. Yeah. I'm Wolverine. I'm the best that
I'm the best there is at what I do.
But I do.
But you know, so the books restart so frequently, you know, it's just, I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I've got Detective Comics from around issue, I don't know, like 200 through the end of the first volume.
Right.
And I don't have all the New 52 issues. And it was just like, you know what? I don't need to get these anymore. And it's just, you know, same thing like when they started, you know, with those Heroes Reborn over at Marvel with the Rob Liefeld and those guys.
Yep, Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld.
I didn't buy all of those, but they were new volumes and it didn't matter because I had what, you know, came up into that. And then they get into the point where they're doing all their renumbering games and they, You know, they'll renumber a book when it's close to being a milestone. You know, like Action and Detective, the only reason they brought those books back to their original numbering is because they're close to 1,000. You know, it's like, what's the over-under on how many issues past 1,000 Action's going to make it before they reboot that to a number one again?
Well, I think they made the right decision when Crisis happened, because those were two books that they didn't revolume. Action, they kept the numbering for. Superman lost its numbering. Superman's numbering went into Adventures of Superman. Yeah, that just happened kind of like with New 52. And I'm sure there was people in a conference room, and there's probably some people that were in our boat where we should keep it. And this legacy is like huge. And then there's the people that, but this is like a relaunch. We're making a new universe, you know, that kind of mentality. And now we're kind of in this weird hybrid where in DC, at least in my opinion, it's a little hard for me, being a big DC fan, to understand the continuity now, because of New 52, because New 52 leads into Rebirth, and it's kind of like, well, what is kept, what is new? We still don't know. And then when New 52 came, it was very ambiguous. There was this 5-year thing, and then we
I'm
didn't
nowhere
know what
near as big
happened.
a I'm nowhere near as big. I mean, I started with Marvel, right? So my entry point to comics was Marvel. You know, I had read comics when I was little. I mean, probably from the point that I could pick up and read a comic, you know, with my brother. I have older brothers, so you know, there were ones around. I remember reading. You know, I remember Richie Rich and Hot Stuff and, you know, Archie's and Uncle Scrooge comics and various, you know, like Batman story or Justice League that are certainly from before I was reading comics regularly. But I count my collecting as starting when I went and bought my first book that I bought with my own. You know, on my own volition, that I went to the store and I bought this comic off the rack. And from that point forward, I have been buying comics every month.
Do you still have that comic? The one that
I
you bought with your own money?
do not. And I'll tell you, so the first one I bought was Amazing Spider-Man 88.
Nice.
And I came back for 89 and, you know, onwards. And I loved Spider-Man, and it just Spider-Man led me into other things at Marvel. But what I did back then, because I was 8 when I bought that comic, and you know, there was no videotape, there was no internet, there was no, you know, cable TV, any of these kind of things. So I mean, I used to cut the Spider-Man figures out of my comics and make kind of like paper dolls with them and have little adventures, because there
Oh,
weren't really
nice.
action figures either. You know, so I cut up my first 10 issues of Spider-Man I probably bought. So I rebought those when I was a teenager, you know, probably a young teenager. So I mean, I have a Amazing Spider-Man 88 that I've had since I was 12 or 13. But it's not the exact same one that I bought when I was 8, because that one I chopped up and totally destroyed.
I don't think I've ever done that. I've done some coupons, cutting
Oh,
out like a subscription order thing, and
I had an entire
the stamps and stuff.
Marvel value stamp book full of 100 Marvel value stamps that I chopped out of comics, including Incredible Hulk 181.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't do too much of that, but I did trade a lot of my early. It was a way to read more when I was a kid, you know? It was like, oh, I have Sergeant Rock number whatever, and somebody else said, well, I'll trade you for this. And then I go read an Avengers or whatever. So we would have like a group of school in elementary school where we'd trade comics. So that's how I lost the majority of what I got early on.
Yeah, so I don't have that exact comic, but I've got my copy of Amazing 88 that I've got now. I've had for 40 years at least.
But
And
you have Amazing Fantasy 15, don't you?
yes, I do.
Yeah.
I have a complete Spider-Man, excluding variant covers, which is another thing that we can talk about in a second. But I mean, anyway, I mean, so I have the runs, but you know, at a certain point, you know, they'd start rebooting things. And then, but it would be like you rebooted things because it was Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it didn't happen again for 20 years, you know? And it's just like once they started noticing that sales went up for number one issues and that they dropped from there as a rule, and you know, it's gotten to the point now where it's incredibly rare for a comic book from Marvel or DC to make it past issue 25. I mean, DC, I mean, I have a lot of respect for them that they actually stuck it out and put out 52 issues. They have this bizarre fascination with the number 52, right? But you know, they put out 52 issues of these books before starting everything over again at number one. And I'm curious if they're gonna keep that up, or if they're going to go with the trend that everybody else seems to go with, where now you pretty much somebody's going to be on a book, and either when the creative team changes, sales drop, or it, you know,
Or an
sales
event of
drop
some
early,
sort.
or it's been out for just long enough that sales attrition has gone away. Like, I'll give you the example. So like Howard the Duck from Marvel. Chip Zdarsky's off the book as of issue 11. So issue 11's the last issue. And they'll do another Howard the Duck, but it'll be a different creative team, you know. And they do that with pretty much any of these books now. It's like they go along for a certain period of time. Now, they will cancel books earlier if they're not selling.
Right.
But look at Mark Waid, when Waid and Samnee were doing Daredevil. That book got up around 25 or so, and it was just, man, these guys have been doing this book too long, and the numbers are, you know, the numbers on issue 26 are just by definition going to be lower than if we made issue one. So they just restarted that book, and it still had Mark Waid, it still had Chris Samnee, it just had a number one, and by God, the sales numbers went up.
Still, even in with Howard the Duck,
Yeah.
it relaunched after Secret Wars with the
Right.
same creative
Oh,
team.
well, as did Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. I think it was like it went through
Spider
like,
Gwen. I mean, you could go on and on. Spider
So
Woman.
at this point, they have cracked the code of the buying pattern of younger, I think younger people buying comics. That they like buying number ones more. They like feeling like they're getting in on the beginning. So they're just going to do that. And, you know, interestingly, I know it's not isolated. There are a number of people that I've talked to that were totally confused and they ended up not buying both the Rebirth issue and the number one issue because two issues of Batman came out within 2 weeks of each other. They were both number one. They both had Rebirth on the title, although one had Rebirth underneath
Underneath, yep.
Batman and the other one added a trade dress on the top. But these are not hardcore comic people. And, you know, since they put 20 covers on every comic book anyway, they just thought, oh, I already have Batman number one. And they only bought one or the other of those two issues. And I don't know how many sales DC is losing out on by doing that, by putting out two number one issues within a couple of weeks of each other. But, you know, it's just like, what's the logical extension
Right.
is that I was saying the other day? It's like, wow, we're going to get to a point where there's no such thing as a number two issue anymore. And we can go back and you and I can just use the volume number. As like we used to use an issue number. Oh, you know, I need Batman volume 356, you know.
It could get that way.
But you know, it's just you got that funny thing. And then with the variant covers, you know, at one point when they weren't just rampant, I collected, you know, because I collected Spider-Man. So I got every Spider-Man and I tried to get all the variant covers as well. But then they started having 1 in 25 Chase covers, 1 in 50, 1 in 100, and just crazy things like that. And it got to the point where I'd look at it and say, you know what? I can buy this 1 in 100 Spider-Man sketch art cover, and for the same amount of money, I can buy Aquaman number 8 in very good plus condition, or probably that's even an exaggeration because I could probably buy Aquaman 6, 7, and 8 or something in fine condition for the amount of money that these, you know, they were going for, you know, like $150, $200 yeah. for some variant cover that came out, you know, last month. And it was just, it's crazy.
And that's what causes the shop owners to have big stacks of books.
And it's just like, I'm done, right?
Because they've sold the variants. They've sold that $200 book to one person, and they sell their usually pull list, and then they're stuck with all that inventory.
Well, you know, the other thing is like when somebody, I mean, I guess if somebody is only buying variant covers, and maybe they're buying them because they're under the delusion that they're going to be worth lots of money and hold their value. I would say that in 99% of the cases, they're in for a rude surprise, because as I watch these things just kind of out of the corner of my eye, variant cover pricing kind of goes up after the book comes out, and within about 3 months it peaks, and then it goes down. And it might not go all the way down to, you know, being worthless, but it's never going to be as much as it was in those first few months. And a lot of that has to also do with just supply and demand. The supply is lower, but the demand goes away, because once that volume of the book is canceled and they have another volume of the book, nobody's looking for that volume anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to collect it. The demand dries up. And there you have it. I mean, what are the demand for, you know, now that, you know, for a while I would go to conventions, and a lot of those first issues of the Rebirth books, I mean, not Rebirth, sorry, the New 52 books were going for fairly big bucks, you know, yeah. Batman and some of the others. Now that Rebirth is out and New 52 is kind of in the rearview mirror, I don't know that you're going to have that many people wanting to collect a set of Rebirth anymore. And over the next few years, I will suspect that the prices are going to start plummeting on those early issues. I mean, not all the way down to nothing, but certainly not, I don't know.
Not to 100.
I don't think someone's going to be up paying $100 for, you know, New 52 Batman number one anymore. I mean, I can go back and spend $100 and buy a Batman from, you know, 1960s, you know, in pretty nice condition.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, so, and it kind of goes into that speculation market stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people buy for short term now and sell really fast.
Yeah. It's funny, because the second that something hits the news, you got the people who are just watching it. Like the latest one is Invincible Iron Man, I think 7 is the first appearance of that Riri Johnson character.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was in the news the other day. So all of a sudden, that's on eBay for $25 to $40.
All it takes is an announcement, even if it's a TV show. It goes up, and then as soon as the show comes out, you give it, like you said, 3 months. And then you could, you know, once it loses interest, you could get it for what you want.
Right, exactly. So, you know, anyway, so I got out of the habit of trying to buy every single book. And once that started happening, it was just like, well, am I enjoying this or not? And if I wasn't enjoying it and I wasn't reading it, I'd stop getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so my tastes changed. Same thing on the variant covers. You know, it's like at a certain point I was trying to collect them all. You bring Valiant up. You know, for a while there, I was buying all the Valiant books, and I was trying to get, you know, the different covers, at least the different regular covers of the books.
Right.
But then they went nuts with it, and they realized it was a gold mine for their hardcore fans, all wanted these books and were spending prodigious amounts of money to have complete collections of all the different covers.
Covers, yep.
And so they started having more and more rarities and more chase this and that. And, you know, it's just like, I just, you know, I'm done. I'm only going to buy one copy. I picked the cover that I like best and then I would get it.
That
and
sounds then, like exactly like our yeah. ways, at least with this company, with the variant yeah. covers.
And then they got to the point where they had that whole Chase miniseries, the Legend of the Geomancer,
yeah.
associated with the Book of Death. And, you know, whether they held to this or not, I'm not sure. But at the time they were saying, oh, you know, this is a one in the first issue, I think, was 1 in 25. And then 2, 3, and 4 were maybe 1 in 10. But. You know, got to the point where you were paying like, you know, they, you know, stores wanted just right out of the gate, $25, $30 or more for this comic. They weren't going to do a digital of it. They said they weren't going to reprint it anywhere. And I'm just like, I'm done. You know, it's like before it would be like, you know what? I don't need this Chase cover. I can still read the story in like the regular cover. When they now told me, boy, you can't even read this story unless you pay a lot of money, I just said, I'm done.
Well, I agreed
as a
with
Book
your
of
article.
Death, I walked away from Valiant.
Right. I agreed with your article. It was a real well thought out article. And I still believe to this day, when you like categorized Valiant consumers, I believe that's true. I find the hardcore Valiant fan very threatening. God forbid you disagree with anything
I put that out, and I got like all kinds of abuse. I had to like,
but it's the truth.
Not Valiant the company.
No,
you know, Dinesh and they're the nicest guys on the planet. But the fans are like some of them, and not all fans. I mean, there is a certain subset of them that are so totally rabid. I was taking so much abuse out of writing that blog that I had to like quit all the Valiant fan groups.
Right.
You know, it's just like, and you know, guess what? There are hundreds, literally hundreds of other things I can be reading. You know, today I read Faith. I like Faith. You know, they ended Harbinger, which was my favorite title. Mm. You know, so I finished Harbinger up. I stopped reading most of the other ones. There were just points that, and it's not that they were bad, but they were just going off in directions that I didn't like, and I no longer had that completist mentality. You know, I had this completist mentality with Valiant. I had every book Valiant, except for a few of the Nintendo books.
Yes,
I had every book Valiant had ever published. And, you know, once I couldn't have the Legends of the Geomancer, then I started, instead of just automatically buying that DCBS package that had every single Valiant book, I started looking at it and saying, am I liking this book more than I'm liking this other book that I could be reading instead? And the answer in many cases was no. So I stopped getting them.
But you started to question that once they told you that you had to buy this 1 in 25 cover.
Yes.
I think. I don't know if you would have jumped they catered to that collecting mentality, but they did it at the story level. They didn't okay to do it at the variant, because we could drop out any time.
I can skip any variant cover I want.
Right.
When they tell me I can't read a story, then I'm out. You know?
I agree with that 100%. And I cannot imagine how certain people defended that. That to me is like not logical.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's fine. I mean, I didn't care for, like, I mean, the character Blood Squirt that they brought into Bloodshot, I loathe that character. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that character. I mean, I can appreciate other people would like it, you know. I hated it. So it's like, okay, Bloodshot, gone, you know. Ninjak went off into some Deadside dimension.
Oh, that was recent. That was the Shadow Man, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, no, Ninjak went there.
I know.
I was reading Ninjak up to that point, and it was like, you know, I kind of, and that's the thing, it's like I liked Ninjak as the spy. When you start cramming him into these other situations, it's like, you know. Anyway, I mean, it's just a personal thing. I sort of miss them, but I mean, I still read Faith. I'm going to try Britannia when it comes out because I like Juan Jose Rip, who's doing the art on it.
Yeah, the artist of Legends of the Geomancer.
Yeah, well, oh, that I wouldn't know because I never saw Legends of the Geomancer.
He's been drawing, like, for Valiant, like, quite a bit.
But, so, you know, I'll start this new one until they do something that causes me to drop that one. But, you know, I'm at this point, and that's the thing with DC right now, you know. So they've started most of the books over, and I got onto it. And I thought to myself, you're a DC hardcore guy, so I'll bring up this quandary that I'm in with DC right now.
Okay.
Is when I first saw that they were going to be pumping out 17 books bi-weekly, mm-hmm. I thought, man, how are they going to do that? Are they just going to, like, have the writers writing entire story arc up front and then just, you know, doing the juggling necessary to have the artists so they can start, you know, 6 months in advance and get that completed and all this kind of stuff? And I said, well, that'll be interesting. But then, no. Then I got, you know, the previews catalog last month and I noticed that, oh, well, the artist is changing on almost every single book. And, you know, it's like as of issue 4, it's a different art team on there.
Yeah.
And I was really liking Green Lanterns with Robson Rocha on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was off as of issue 4. And then I read something on one of the news sites. I forget which one, that they're bringing in 5 guest artists to help him finish issue 3.
The Green Lanterns?
Yes. So there's 5 additional artists coming in on issue 3 because he can't get 3 done on deadline. So how big of a, you know, mess
It makes you think, based on what we're seeing with the artists, is that it wasn't as well thought out, at least initially, as New 52, because at least New 52 kept some of the teams in place for at least 6 issues.
But the thing is that they weren't trying to put out 2 books a month.
Yeah.
And it's just like they don't make artists anymore, except maybe Stepan Sedgwick, who can actually draw 2 books a month, you know?
Yeah, so, vaguely maybe.
You know, but if you look at it, you know, so now they're having these revolving door creative teams on almost all the books. Not all, you know, 17 of them. All the bi-weekly books have got revolving door. And it's just me.
Let's say artists.
Well, yeah, artists.
So than the
which
writer.
Is the team, right? The yeah. art, the writer is staying, but, you know, the artists are rotating on a regular basis. And I look at it as, how long before fans, like, you know, are they going to start picking up issue 4 off the rack? Because not a lot of people are paying attention to the solicits and knowing this stuff. Are they going to look at it and say, wait a minute, what happened to the art on this?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, even with the same artist on it, you like Action Comics like I do more than you like Superman. Mm-hmm. When I read the 2nd issue of Action Comics, there were some panels in that book that looked really rough to me when I was reading it. And, you know, that is just, I mean, I like the artists, but I mean, it really looked like
it took you out of the
effort
story
was not put into some panels on that book. And I gotta believe it's because they're being rushed to hit these deadlines.
Could be.
You know, and I'm just, you know,
I did not notice it.
But go back and pick up that second issue. Sealed it away in Mylar in a box yet. Especially, it was near the end of the issue. There was a scene where someone's like Doomsday or something's throwing a subway train.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really rough to me. It's like kind of a full page deal.
Yeah.
But
I've noticed some other things, but I mostly, I notice it for other things. Like there's an image in number 2. It's not really spoiling it, but there's an image in number 2 of Batman, and it took me out of the story because there's a sequential scene where there's a chase scene that's chasing Solomon Grundy, and it's supposed to be like a flip based on momentum. At least I think it is. the way the sequential art is telling me, but what it looks like is an actual lift with one hand that Batman's lifting him. And Solomon Grundy's 550 pounds. I mean, he's not a light person.
Well, I haven't read that issue yet, but just thinking of Batman going hand to hand with Solomon Grundy seems not something that should be happening.
But that, you know? So in other words, I see what you're saying. I don't think it has to be something like that jarring at like a, the weight, like, I'm like, well, what did, when he came back from the dead, did he gain powers? Is he like enhanced?
Well, maybe, you know, because what he did at issue number one is certainly not something a normal human man could have been able to do, in my opinion.
Well, he did. It has that Dionysium or whatever that thing is, the compound from the Lazarus pit. I mean, does it make you think or calculate faster than a human could even think?
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't reading Batman in the New 52. I dropped pretty much every New 52 title after the second
wave.
The second line wide crossover, the one with the really lame lenticular covers that kind of like flip back and forth between the two images. The
Villains Month.
Yeah.
Yeah. 3D.
Not the Villains Month, not the one that they were like the 3D looking lenticular covers, but the second one that all the stores ended up eating a ton of covers because they ordered a bunch because the first year had all sold out, and then the second year not only was the stories not as good, but the covers looked kind of crappy.
What was that?
Too.
Was that the Future's End?
Yeah, Future's End.
Okay,
Future's End.
I remember now.
I pretty much dropped almost everything from DC after that. I just walked away from it. And, you know, I thought Rebirth was going to get me back in. I've been buying I've read every one of them that I've gotten so far. I mean, I haven't gotten Last Wednesdays yet because I don't get my DCBS box until the following Tuesday, but I mean, I'm running about 33% on liking them, which, but given that though, I mean, it's 33, it's, you know, it's,
that
you know,
you
so I've liked
before.
Five or six. So it's five or six I wasn't getting before. So, you know, that's something.
And it could be five or six that you're getting twice monthly.
Well, you know, and that's actually what it is. You know, it's interesting though, is I'm going to be dropping some of those for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like Green Lanterns. I'm probably dropping it because of the art.
You're not going to wait to see who the artist is?
I know who the artist is.
Who is it?
I forget off the top of my head.
But it's somebody you don't like.
It was somebody I looked. It was, you know, the other thing is a lot of their artists, you know, they led with a lot of really big name artists.
Right.
And they're rotating in a bunch of people that you never heard of. That when I look them up on the internet and look at samples of their art, it's. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay, but it's nothing knocked my socks off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I'm like, okay, that's going. I like Detective. I didn't care for Batman because of certain unrealities of, you know, Batman. But Detective now is getting pulled into a
Bat Family
Rebirth's first crossover. So it's going to be Detective, Batman, and Nightwing. And I'm not getting Nightwing, and I'm not getting Batman. So guess what? I'm dropping Detective for that arc.
For me, I don't even read the solicits, so I don't know these things. For DC, I just say yes.
Yeah, see, so I look at it, and it's just like when I see that the new artist team comes on, I either know who the artists are or else I look them up. And if I don't like the artist, again, since I've gotten out of the habit of just buying everything, now I'm like, okay, well, I'm not getting that anymore.
Well, what are you liking as far as like a publisher right now? Is it Image or what
Image
is your go to?
Image is my favorite.
Yeah,
I probably read more Image books than any other single publisher. Marvel. I'm not reading everything from them by any means, but I'm reading probably 25 or 26 books now. What I like about Marvel is they have so many books that just feel like they have a unique vision or a unique thing to say. I just don't get the feeling that they're all being crammed down into a single house style.
Right.
You know, I mean, certain books, I mean, it's like I don't get most of the, you know, I don't get most really any X books, although I do like All New Wolverine, strangely. It's X-23 in the Wolverine outfit.
He's a good writer, though. I really like that guy.
Yeah, so I like All New Wolverine, and that's been kind of self-contained. So until that gets pulled into some big X-Men crossover, I'm on board with it.
Did you read Tom Taylor's Injustice, the video game tie-in, or no?
Yes, the first couple of years, and then it just kind of got weary. I don't know if they brought another writer in, but the first 2 years were really good.
Well, that was him, yeah. And then they brought in Buccioletto, or I don't know how to pronounce his name. So yeah, so as far as your garage, this is one specific question I have, is your garage has probably been refactored to not even have cars in them, correct?
It's a 3-car garage and we keep one car in it. You know, on a 3-car garage, there's often a 2-car part and a 1-car part.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1-car part, that door is fixed in place and doesn't even have an opener on it.
Right.
So it doesn't open. It hasn't been opened since, you know, it just doesn't open. Let's just put it that way. Right. I don't even have rails on it for it to open.
Okay.
And the door is double thick insulated. It's the double insulated aluminum, and I don't have windows in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, on garage doors, you can get, I don't know if, garage doors, the roll-up ones?
Yeah, you could have a window, yeah.
So you can get either, like, the single thick or the double thick that has, like, the insulation in between the two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So mine has the insulation, and I don't have the windows either because that would let light and heat in.
But you pretty much keep – I would imagine that garage is not like a working garage and there's smell like gasoline or anything.
Oh, no, I don't keep any – there's not like a workbench in there or anything.
Yeah, because comics, at least in the Bronze Age when it was paper, it absorbs smell. So I was just really curious about that.
No, I mean, we pull one car into it and that's it. And then, you know, you pull that car out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my wife had the idea that all the racking that I built, we bought this really thick plastic sheeting.
Yes.
At the hardware store, Home Depot or something. It's like really thick.
Mm-hmm.
And that, we have that covering all of the racks too. And it's all, it overlaps, and she actually put, Velcro strips on it.
Oh, nice.
So that it all stays closed, but you can kind of, you know, just open, you know, they overlap by about 6-8 inches in the middle, mm-hmm. but I can kind of pull them apart and open it so I can get at the boxes behind.
Right.
And pull them out if I want to.
So is it mostly the garage? I've seen your one room that has the statues and stuff like that, but is there more than just that one room?
No, I mean, I've got, you know, this room here has, you know, I've got, I don't know, like 20 or 25 short drawer boxes in it in the closet.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of bookcases, you know, so I've got, you know, various things on bookcases in here. And then I've got a bunch of statues and art and things like that. I keep on, it's like, well, it's actually going to happen at some point now. So my 25-year-old son still hasn't moved out. My 21-year-old son just graduated from college, and he got a job that's about 45 miles away.
Right.
So he doesn't want to drive that far every day, and he's got a girlfriend. He kind of wants to move in with her.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's not going to move out right away because they, you know, we counsel, you know, wait a little while and make sure you like the job and make sure you save up money and things like that. But within a year, he'll have moved out, And then I'm going to turn his room into a library.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm going to have bookcases in there with a lot, because right now I've got a lot of my my collected editions are in. You know the boxes that comics come in, the diamond boxes?
Yes.
I just get a lot of those from my local comic shop a lot of times, and I have probably about 50 of those that just have hardcovers in them. Because I just don't have space on my bookshelves for them.
So do you just extend them upward and tape them, or what do you do?
They're just folded closed. They're in a closet. They're not sitting on the ground. I built a little platform to keep them like about 5 inches off the ground.
Right.
Downstairs, just in case the washing machine leaks or something, it won't. You know, that's a tip, you know, never put anything on the ground, right?
I've actually had my dad build like these things that lift things off the floor.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I designed them around the size of short boxes.
Yeah.
And it'd have to be a pretty deep flood.
Exactly. Somebody shows a picture of their comic boxes and they're sitting directly on the floor, especially on a room that has carpeting.
Right.
Like, get those things up off the floor. Because it's not like you're necessarily worried about, you know, like your house flooding from a storm. But, you know, water heater can break if you're downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Washer and dryer.
Washing machine can go out. A pipe in the bathroom wall can burst. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of different things can happen that'll put water on the ground. And you want things set up, you know, several inches up off the ground. I mean, it's not, you know, like you said, you're not going to, you know, prevent them if you get like, you know, a foot of water in there or something. But, you know, that's not what typically happens. What typically happens is you just get, you know, a half of an inch of water that you want to prevent, you know, from getting at stuff.
That's right.
So anyway, once he moves out, I'm going to get bookcases in there and then I'll take all those boxes and I'll get a nice chair in there and some, you know, a lamp or whatnot. And, you know, that'll be, you know, I'll move a lot of all my collected editions and stuff will go in there.
And are you still in taking any kind of statues and figures or no?
Not as many, you know, I was getting all the Bowen busts, right? And I don't think license or just stopped making them. Probably around when Disney bought Marvel.
Yeah.
But they haven't made a bust in a really long time, so I really not as much anymore.
Do you have all the Bowen busts?
I have almost all the Bowen busts. I there's a couple of variants that I don't have.
Do you have full figure too? Or no?
I have a bunch of full figure statues, nothing like a complete collection. But I have almost all of the mini busts. I think I'm except for maybe 4 or 5 mini busts. Like I don't have the Chrome Silver Surfer, you know, which is very expensive. I don't have, but I have the regular paint Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer.
There's a couple others like that where there was like some variants that I don't have.
Do you have them all on display or are they kind of some of them boxed up now?
No, they're all out on display.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. I find I run out of room, so I have to rotate the display.
Well, you know, I've got a pretty big comic room here, so, you know, that's actually a benefit that they stopped making them, because I would have run out. I was pretty close to running out of room when they stopped making them, so.
As far as capacity of comic books, is there a lot of room to grow in the garage, or are you starting to think?
I've got a couple of wooden cabinets that just have stuff in them in the garage that I need to move out and build a couple of more racks. Okay. And that'll hold another 70 long boxes.
Oh, wow.
I would love to
physically be in that garage just to see it.
Well, if you're ever in Southern California, Mike, you have a standing invitation.
Oh, thank you, sir. Hey, I kind of want to wrap this up because I don't want to keep you all day. I know you have, like, you work sometimes on the weekends and you have other stuff you got to do, and I really appreciate you talk. I want to talk to you more, so I'd like to even have like maybe a follow up at a certain
Oh,
point in
sure.
time,
Anytime.
just to pick your brain some more,
We kind
because
of got we kind of got diverted on down various aisles. I don't know. I ever finished the Guinness story and some of the other stuff,
yeah,
but
there's still a lot to talk about, but do you want to leave your contact information, like Twitter or Facebook handle, to anybody,
yeah, sure. I mean,
or
I
your
have
website for sure? The
I have comicspectrum.com, and I hopefully that'll be staying up. They discontinued the website builder that I'm using, so I've been bugging my son to help me retool the website. He actually got a job at a company that builds a website building app. It's called Liferay.com. So
Oh,
it's like,
nice.
I'm like, dude,
Help me
you
get
gotta
this.
help your dad retool his website, you know.
Yeah.
But I've got the blog also. So the blog is, at wordpress.comicspectrum.com, something like that. Or let me look at my blog. Hang on just a second. Because it the blog gets pulled into the it's comicspectrum.wordpress.com and then just comicspectrum.com. And I have a Comic Spectrum page on Facebook, and I'm at Comic Spectrum on Twitter. And my email is bob@comicspectrum.com. So if you just remember Comic Spectrum, comicspectrum, Comic Spectrum, you can find me on pretty much any of the social media platforms.
And
Well, I haven't done Instagram.
would you be willing to answer questions about
Oh,
collecting
I
if
actually
that all?
do. I probably get two or three questions a week that kind of dribble in from people who notice my blogs or, see me from somewhere or another. And, just this week I was answering somebody asked me some questions about Mylar bags that was, I preface it with, look, I'm no expert on Mylar bags, but let me tell you, this is what I can tell you about this. But he was asking me, he had bought some, he's like, I bought 725R Mylar bags from, Gerber, and
It's real specific.
the flaps don't close or bend. How do you
Oh,
protect
he's buying
comics?
the real thick ones, is what he's doing.
And but when I buy the full, the full 4 mil Mylars, you flip that flap over and I just use a fingernail to bend it, because you can build your own crease into it. So I told him, I said, I manually fold them and I create a crease. And I said, well, but even then I tape it, you're not going to get 100% airtight solution out of a Mylar, unless you heat seal it or something. But then he asked me, oh, do you use full or half backs? And I told him I use half backs, and I pointed him at a couple of my blogs, and kind of went back and forth. Then I, someone asks a question like that, I kind of go out of my way to do as best I can to answer it. I get like probably once a week someone sends me something wanting to sell their comic collection to me that's, a bunch of misshapen 90s comics or something. It's just like I have kind of a form letter that I send back to them about how, thanks for thinking of me, but I wouldn't have 105,000 unique comic books if I needed, what you've
Yeah,
got.
from the 90s, right?
That kind of stuff. Or then somebody will ask me about, what things are worth, and I just kind of point them at places because I don't like to concentrate on, what things are worth. And same thing with if people ask me about selling their collection, and I'm like, I have zero experience on selling comic
Yeah,
books.
same here.
I give away comic books, I buy comic books, I really don't sell comic books. So I, tell them, talk to your local shop, look at, if you want to spend a lot more time, you can get a lot more money if you sell them yourself on eBay or something. Just realize that if you do go to a comic book store to sell your books, they're a business. If you're really lucky, they'll give you somewhere between 30 and 50% of what they go for.
That's usually
and
the
that's
ratio,
only
I
on
guess.
Like really key books.
Right.
Something
right.
that they think that they can flip really quick. Mm-hmm. But like most books, they're going to pay you pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be bulking it out and they'll give
those
you,
are the
you know,
quarter bin books.
You know,
yeah.
20, you know, if you're lucky, $10 or $20 for a long box full of comics, you mm-hmm. know. That's where some of these people can just buy tremendous amounts of comics because they buy bulk collections like that.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't have time to talk to you about and I want to save for next time is I want to talk about grading and how you feel about that and also like CGC and all that other stuff.
I definitely have thoughts on those topics. So
yeah, so that,
talk
that,
to you again. It's fun talking to you. I mean, I like talking comics. It's, you know, I have a lot of friends who are kind of into comics, but not as into comics. Like this whole group of people that I hang around with at San Diego, which is coming up mm-hmm. soon, you know, they started putting out the schedules and for the con, and I'm looking at it and give me a minute to do a digression here. Whenever okay. the topic of San Diego Comic Con comes up, all these people come jumping out of the bushes with an axe to grind against San Diego. And they're like, oh, that con isn't about comic books and it's all this and that. And it's just, they're bitter because they can't get a table or
a
they
hotel
can't get a,
or
they
a
can't
ticket.
Get a hotel or they can't get a ticket or whatever. But guess what? You can't say that it's not about comics. Now, it doesn't emphasize comics in the way that they don't control what the media covers. And the media likes to show people in costumes. And people who are now going to the con, they like to go to panels that are all about Hollywood celebrities and the movies and TV shows and cosplay and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do anything about that. Now, that said, when I looked at the Thursday schedule for San Diego Comic-Con, there were over 50 panels on Thursday that were pure comic book panels. They were nothing to do with TV or toys or movies or video games or any of that. It was comic book creators. It was the actual comics. It was how to draw comics, how to color comics, you know, legal issues with licensing characters for comics or, you know, things like that. It was all comics, 50 panels. On Thursday.
That's a lot.
And when I went, when I looked at Thursday, at Friday came out. I haven't looked at the Saturday. They come out one a day, 2 weeks before. So
right.
today, the Saturday. So when I looked at the Friday one yesterday, there were like 60 panels about comics. You look at any one of those days, any other con I go to, there's not 50 panels about pure comic books in the entire convention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for someone to say that the con is not about comics, they're just not looking. Because, you know, the thing that I like about them is since they're nonprofit, you know, when I go to these panels that are about comics, I might be in a room and there's only 20, 25 other people in that room with me.
Right, because it's those actors ones that you can't get into or have the lines
right.
around the
they're all they have all lines late. Because someone wants to see Stephen Amell.
Yeah.
Someone wants to see, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So those things are totally crammed full of people. Or, you know, like a Marvel DC panel if, you know, Brian Michael Bendis is at it. You know, that's jam-packed. But if I go into Terry Moore, spotlight on Terry Moore, I'm sitting in the room with like 30 other people who love Terry Moore, and he just chats with us for an hour.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like it's phenomenal. But the for-profit cons, there is no way they would be running a panel that only got 25 or 30 people. But the San Diego Comic-Con, to their credit, they continue year after year to schedule and run these panels that are about comic books, the small comic books, the smaller publishers. They get a voice at that show for the people who are interested in it.
Yeah.
And I could go to that con, and last year I went to like something like 25 panels over the course of the con. And
that's
all of them were about comics, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't go to a single Hollywood panel, you know, and that was just, that was as many as I could go to, you know? I have like six or seven that I'm planning to go to on Thursday.
Out of the 50. I went to San Diego Comic-Con like twice in a row, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I especially like the area. Like I love San Diego.
Personally,
as a person that wants to go somewhere and vacation and go on the boat tours and go do a lot of things, I think it's fantastic. What kind of has driven me away personally, it has nothing to do with the actors or the comics or whatever. It's just the sheer mass of people and trying to get a ticket. I don't like to deal with that stress.
It's really hard to get a ticket. Now, someone can legitimately bitch about San Diego Comic-Con that they've grown too big and it's hard to get a ticket and all that. I can't argue with somebody about that. Yeah. That's all true. But if they say that it doesn't have comics, that's just not true.
Yeah.
Because there are more comic book panels. There are more, you know, like comic book dealers selling comics in the silver and gold, in the Silver Age and Dealer Pavilion, and people selling original art and all these kinds of things, more than any other con I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just...
The other thing is,
to get in the door.
When I did go, it was a good opportunity to see, like, the DC booth. Like, they would have the whole smorgasbord of creators lined up and accessible. Like, because people weren't, like, totally driven to these creators, you could just get right in, talk to Jeff Johns, have a little conversation. It was amazing for that, you know? Yeah.
Because people want to see the actors, you know, if you put like one of the people from a show there, it would be swarmed, you know. And DC's different than the Marvel booth, although DC's been transforming over the years. I mean, when you go to the Marvel booth at Comic-Con, you'd be almost hard pressed just by looking at that booth to tell that they actually put out comic books, you know.
Isn't the booth turned into the Iron Man armor or the Thor?
It's movies and props and toys and video games and cartoons and all of that.
Yeah.
But the DC booth, there's a lot about the comics there, although it's getting less and less every year with the success of the TV shows. You know, DC does the hell out of those TV shows, and it's becoming a big thing for them.
Well, I hope one day that I can meet you at a con. I tend to go to the East Coast, even though I'm West Coast. Like, I consider Colorado West Coast.
You know one you should think about, because I don't think it sells out, is WonderCon.
Okay.
Because it's run by the same people that run San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a mini San Diego Con. It actually is like San Diego was 10, 12 years ago.
Is that San Francisco? Where is that?
No, it's in L.A. now.
Oh, it's in L.A.? Okay.
This year it was at the L.A. Convention Center. It had been in Anaheim for a couple of years, and I think it's going back to Anaheim. Really nice. It's at the Anaheim Convention Center. It's across from Disneyland.
Yeah. The two that I always hit up are Heroes in North Carolina and Baltimore Comic Con in Baltimore. Those are like
I really wanted to go to Heroes Con this year. I just couldn't make it work.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my Inkwell Award from this year. Even as we speak, it's sitting here. I got for being 5 years on the nomination committee for the Inkwell Awards.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I didn't know that. I try to keep up with all Bob Breitel stuff, but I did not know that. So that's an interesting fact. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the short notice and you being able to spend time talking to me about comics. And hopefully we could get back into the grading and stuff because I'm really curious about that stuff. So
I'd love to. Send me a link for the episode when you have it up and I'll pop it up on my social media and all over the place.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It should come out next week. And I know that next week is here. Is next week San Diego?
No, it's the week after next.
Okay.
So if it comes out next week, good.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later, Bob, and thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.